Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon and welcome. This is What Doesn't Kill Ya, Food Industry Insight with your host, me, Katie Kiefer. I'm broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's on Heritage Radio Network. We're located at 261 Moore Street. Brunch is now being served, folks. My guest in the studio today, which hardly ever happens, but in the studio today, I have Chris Daly. Chris founded Hip for Kids. That's Hip as in hospitality industry professionals. He brought that, put together that program about 14 years ago. It's a 501c3 company, and it's designed to educate parents and children on the fundamentals and ongoing importance of healthy eating and good nutrition. Hip for Kids' primary components include multimedia learning programs and community outreach through innovative educational lifestyle programs for children and young adults. Welcome to the program, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us. And sitting in with us today as my co-host and alter ego is Christy Robb. Christy is the food director for St. John's Bread and Life in Bed-Stuy, where I sometimes volunteer. And she has definitely been the best thing that came out of that program for me. So, Chris, give us the thumbnail. How'd you get Hip for Kids started? Because 14 years ago, childhood obesity epidemic was not on the radar of most people. How did you figure that out?
That's right. Well, basically, situation was I was working in Paris with a Michelin-starred chef, and I was still a super runner at the time, and this one chef in particular, one Saturday night, commented to me that, you know, he said, "Oh, we're the same age." And I said, "Wow, that's terrific. I didn't realize that." He was, you know, had quite a bit of weight on his frame, unfortunately, and, you know, real gourmand. And I thought to myself, you know, he had wanted me to stay in Paris and in France and work with Dannon to teach children about what they typically call le goût, the flavor. And I countered with, maybe we should start teaching people about portions and things like that. And I had come back to New York and had really noticed throughout that Americans just right here in the five boroughs were really, you know, not eating very good food for the most part. And that it seemed like everybody was really kind of falling you know, prey to this manufactured food crisis, as I call it, and really just through a lot of medical people that I know, I started to put it together and saw the proverbial handwriting on the wall.
I can see that. So I don't often think of French chefs as being fat, I have to say. I worked in France in several kitchens myself. Everybody was real thin. But maybe that was just, you know, old-fashioned cuisine or just a guy who liked to eat a lot. But anyway, so when you started Hip for Kids, What was the initial concept for the program? It was like working in schools. It was after school programs. It was like, what was your vision of how this would get off the ground and how you would get kids interested?
Was all of the above, actually, because the situation was when I conceived it and I you know, had the idea originally was going to be a 21st century multimedia company, if you will. And then the other half would be public outreach, which we have over the years developed 8 separate programs that have been tailored from everything from what we call Hip Cooking 101 to Hip Cooking 104. We do community events, large-scale events, and, you know, the biggest reaction that we have gotten really is hands-on in very small communities here in New York, if you will, very, you know, highly underserved communities where we've had, I think, terrific impact, you know, especially Harlem. We're doing a lot of stuff in the Bronx here coming up in the fall, which was backburnered because of Sandy and then a bus strike. But, you know, essentially we've been almost, you know, under the radar, if you will, for many, many years because we don't have, a huge budget. Nobody gets paid. The situation is that we take that programming directly into, you know, places like Bed-Stuy. We were working there 8 years ago with...
In the school system?
No, this was actually, we did a couple of things in conjunction with the Roadrunners. But the whole situation is that we, you know, had tailored 8 separate community programs that we really, you know, felt would do the best, or have the most impact, I should say, after school especially. I realized very early on that there was so much work teachers have to do in school, you know, for a regular work day for them, that, you know, the respite or, you know, the time to really get kids involved was after school. So
absolutely. And do the schools, I mean, you are in schools now, or most of your programs are online or in community centers? I'm still a little sketchy on how this exactly works.
They're both, actually. We have curriculum that we had started putting up online over a decade ago that, for instance, was accessed by Michelle Page Patterson and featured for Healthy Steps to Albany 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. We've had curriculum and activity online for well over a decade. We are working in schools in the Bronx currently with Tomas Grabski, one of our favorite principals, if he's listening. We, you know, basically had to delay the rollout of programming that we did last year in District 4 in Harlem, which was strictly after school for that district alone. Basically, that was brand new, too hip for kids, in that it was a real synthesis of not only our after-school programming where the kids hands-on cook and learn the recipes and implement them themselves, but they also build a recipe book along the line. They interact with the multimedia that's being published simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And there are other elements that are I'm keeping under the radar, so to speak, because it's intellectual property that, I just want to wait for us to be able to unveil it and, you know, take the credit for it. That'll happen this fall. We were supposed to be in the Bronx right now, but the bus strike actually got in our way.
So when you have these after-school programs and the kids are actually learning to cook, how do you get the facilities? Like, what are the schools?
New York
that
City
have,
schools.
And they have culinary facilities available to you? What do? Do you bring in a hot plate? Or I can't imagine that they let you work in the kitchens.
Well, one of the things that we do is we actually do work in the kitchen. And Principal Grabski, for instance, Nancy Pereira in District 4, they were instrumental really helping us perfect our after school. Mm-hmm. The situation is that we have tailored community programs for so long. We can do hot food, cold food. We can do it in Central Park, for instance, right. Echo Fest, where we demoed for, you know, thousands and thousands of people, all the way down to a small, health fair, for instance, with Mount Sinai School of Medicine, if you will, or Omega Size is one of our great groups that were. Hello, Edison Bonds, by the way, if you're listening. The Omega Size, we've been working with them for 5 years, I think it is. And the last program that we did, we missed last year, but, take a lot of the program to Harlem, East Harlem, and again in the Bronx this year. But we have done so many different scenarios where we've cooked so many different things. Kitchens are actually not necessary, but in District 4 they did follow through, where we actually now, when we do work with New York City schools, have a kitchen right at our command. And it works very, very well, because the way that we created the program through not only a curriculum key that I wrote that I shared with a number of teachers in District 4, basically the situation is they use that curriculum key and expand upon it, and then for the second part of the after school, the kids actually come down to the kitchen.
Right.
To actually act on what they've just learned.
That's so awesome, Chris. Fantastic.
Thank you.
So are you able to track how much your programs are changing family eating habits, or how much kids are starting to cook at home? Do you get feedback from families or kids? Do you, I mean, has it resulted in, for example, weight loss, or do you run any kind of surveys with whether or not kids are losing weight or families are losing weight as a result of, you know, participating in these programs?
Yeah, well, we have excellent word of mouth that comes back to us with regards to, you know, the parental feedback especially. And we know that we're teaching skills to a lot of the middle-aged school people, especially, that are what we call transferable skills.
They middle are, school, you mean?
Yeah.
Not middle-aged.
Did I say middle-aged?
Yeah.
But yeah, middle school, I'm sorry. But basically the situation is that we teach these middle school children these skills, and they are transferable, and we get excellent feedback. And quite frankly, well, we had tried to implement a number of tools that were, you know, real solid metrics, if you will, but our budget has always been so slight.
Right.
That we have not really had, you know, the ability to track. Like when we had our original website up, we had a host company, VPI, that did outstanding analytics on just the curriculum, where it went out to nationwide at one point. And I'm very proud of repeating this constantly. This is going back more than 8-9 years. The curriculum was actually being employed. We had, I think it was 13 requests in Hawaii, 7 in Guam.
Amazing.
So the ability to track that with the loss of VPI as our host company, that they basically imploded when the economy imploded. Mm-hmm. We transferred, and now we have Mr. Frank Turbin in Phoenix, who is actually outside of Phoenix, a real bona fide cowboy, who is actually hosting the site for us and does pretty much most of the work gratis.
Oh, man, that's amazing. Now, when you were talking about these programs, I mean, first of all, the name, I'm going to go back to the name, Hospitality Industry Professionals. So when somebody implements a program, say, in Hawaii, are they doing it with in tandem with somebody who's in the restaurant business or in the food business already? Or is it just you get input from your colleagues in the food industry and they develop recipes for you, or they help you develop curriculum? I'm a little hazy on that detail.
The situation with the curriculum is, especially the online curriculum, is this, that Denise Hidalgo, who has been with us since, I think 11 plus years, actually wrote curriculum with Scholastic. She wrote for Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. And we had multi-level curriculum at one point. The new curriculum is actually being uploaded within the next couple of weeks, just a little bit that can be used here locally until the school year ends. And then we will follow on with Project Apple in the fall,
right,
which is something I'm very, very proud of. But essentially, the situation is that curriculum has always been available for free,
uh-huh,
and the recipes go hand in hand with that curriculum that is downloadable for free by any teacher in the country.
I see.
And it really has changed dramatically with what I developed over the past year and a half that I call Project Apple, which will really shed some serious light on what I was talking about 13, 14 years ago when I said 21st century multimedia company. And, the pro bono lawyers, they get, they say, oh, watch the hyperbole, you know, so on and so forth. But one of my descriptors has always been that I had wanted to change the website, for instance, into what I call a counterpart, if you will, a Sesame Street for cooking for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But all, you know,
all
nutritionally based. And then, of course, with the advent of a lot of the media now and the ease and simplicity of loading videos, for instance,
right,
that's really going to be something that we're going to take advantage of.
So that's what Project Apple is all about? That's about something that will be targeted specifically to New York City, or
to the country?
To the country.
Actually, I had designs or
so. It's not a reference to the Big Apple. It's a reference
to... No, it's actually a reference to the first letter in the alphabet and cooking with apples, although it worked nicely with New York. But situation is that... without giving too much away, we also have Henry A.J. Ramos, who's a world-renowned artist, mm-hmm, who's doing some things with us, and that will be a component of Project Apple. We noticed, especially last year, that when, the kids get, after a long school day, they'll get bored. So we decided to implement something that would be a little more fun. and I came up with Art is Hip for Kids and enlisted Henry Ramos. Mm-hmm. And that is, again, you know, kind of keeping that under the radar, exactly what that media will look like. But basically, that's going to be the component that when the kids are sick of the learning and the straight curriculum, if you will,
right,
that it's going to be all art project, like, you know, back in the parks in the late 60s when, you know, we always used to do, you know, an art project to keep ourselves going after school in a creative way.
I don't know. I was too busy smoking weed, probably. That doesn't sound familiar to me. But anyway, we're going to take a very short break. Joe, let's run our quick sponsor drop, and we'll be right back with Chris Daly, the founder of Hip for Kids. Stay tuned.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Yeah. Did I? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, we're back. This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insight with Katie Kiefer. That's me, your host. And in the studio with me right now is Chris Daly, the founder of Hip for Kids, which is also known as Hospitality Industry Professionals for Kids, a 501c3 company designed to educate parents and children on the importance of healthy eating, good nutrition. And joining me is the wonderful Christy Robb, who is the Executive Food Director for St. John's Bread and Life in Bed-Stuy. And Christy, you had a question for Chris, so let's go forward with that.
Yeah, I was curious a couple things. It sounded like at one point maybe that your group does some catering or does some events, or I wasn't sure. You said we do some events.
Well, you do trade shows.
Yes, trade shows. Yeah, we actually, listed right on the website, the 8 I call them traditional formats that we've done. Of course, blasting off with Project Apple is going to be, well, it's basically the culmination of over a decade of experience in the community, and then working with especially New York City teachers, just without letting too much out of the bag. The curriculum key that I developed that they employ is, you know, basically that's what surrounds the whole after school, if you will, and there's not anything like it, so I'm sorry to be cryptic. We want to.
You are. You're way too cryptic.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I guess I'll have to just keep. We'll
have to. Yeah. Just have to actually keep tuned to hipforkids.org, and in the fall with Project Apple's launch, that curriculum key will be furnished to every teacher in the country free of charge. Though that's
interesting, because that might be something that would be good for you too, Christy, and your role at St. John's Bread and Life.
Because we do a lot of teaching, which Katie said before, she teaches there with us
periodically,
and does demos, and just did one recently that was
and
great.
It's a very it's a very receptive community. They really do want to know. They really are interested. A lot of them cook already, so I think they come sort of almost to be not only just entertained, but also to see if I'm going to screw up. It's a very funny group. Anyway, I wanted to go on to the fact that you had just rolled out something that you term a healthy snack product, chocolate hip cookies. Now, doesn't the cookie aspect of this kind of contradict the whole healthy eating message that you try to promote?
No, it doesn't. It's right on par.
Are we supposed to eat cookies? I don't know.
Well, you can
I personally never eat a cookie now.
Oh, my goodness. Shame on you.
No, never.
Oh, my God. Well, one of the things is
I don't
is
eat
that
ice cream either.
When we founded Hip for Kids, and, you know, just very quick going back to you mentioned how communities are hungry for the program.
Yeah.
We did, for New York City schools 6 years ago, I believe it was, in Brooklyn, program showing how, without changing up their budget, actually reducing their budget, a lot like what Alice Waters has worked on, I guess you could say, serving real whole food, that you know, they could really supply some excellent food that you know, kids would really be interested in. You know, people are definitely into the healthy eating aspect, especially the lower income communities that we've been in. But when we founded Hip for Kids, I was always sure to say to people that it can't be about deprivation. You can't tell kids, oh, you can't have that cookie, no chocolate cake for you. you know, know this, know that. Any nutritionist, that's worth his or her salt is going to say you eat the, you know, widest possible scope, if you will, of things. Basically, you know, since we're not about deprivation and because I founded Hip Snacks as a funding mechanism for Hip for Kids, and that first chocolate hip cookie is my point of entry into mainstream, it's absolutely filled with chia. Organic chia seed, kosher organic chia, it sets it apart from a regular mainstream item. So anything, for instance, that you eat with chia, the way that I've manufactured the cookie at Hudson Valley Workshop for the Disabled, by the way, Hudson Valley, it's handmade in the Hudson Valley. Basically, the situation is that it becomes a low glycemic food. So you're not talking about a regular snack item where you have that overload of sugar,
right,
and you have that pop where suddenly, you know, you want more. It's, for instance, our editor of Hip for Kids Today, the magazine on hipforkids.org, basically he said he couldn't believe it the first time he ate the cookie. He just basically went without lunch. And I said, well, Bob, that's because it's basically a low glycemic. Chia has, this ability to slowly release. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to crash your insulin. So if you want that cookie, you're now eating something that's basically, I guess you could say, a mainstream item that is tailored with health aspects in mind. Very what other chocolate chip cookie is loaded with amino acids, antioxidants, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right.
I mean, all the health benefits are right up on the site. Consequently,
how many calories?
120.
Okay.
But and I like to point this out to people that do scrutinize it, even though it is a mainstream item and we are doing much more different things down the road. Our first 5,000 units we did complimentary for Dr. Oz.
Wow.
So if Dr. Oz says
it's okay. Well, what's besides the chia, tell us a little bit more about the ingredients in it that make it a better product than your mainstream chocolate chip cookie, like Amy's, for instance, which I think produces a fantastic chocolate chip cookie. Or no, not Amy's, Tate's.
Sure.
You know
Tate's.
Those? Now
yes.
You can taste the butter in those, so you know there's no hydrogenated vegetable oil in that.
Right.
You can taste all of the ingredients. They're really pure. So what's in yours that makes it, first of all, so low-cal and also boosts, besides the chia, you mentioned amino acids, antioxidants. What else is in there?
Yeah, the chia is the basically...
Oh, that produces all of that.
That's what produces the health benefits. And we, you know, basically make the cookie. A lot of the fat is reduced because we use organic valley from the Hudson... Or organic yogurt, pardon me, from the Hudson Valley.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of the fat replacer, if you will. There's only 10 ingredients. Technically, it's totally organic. It does not have the stamp, but it's... fully natural.
Right.
It has all the things that a chocolate chip cookie has. It has butter from New York State, which is triple shield kosher butter. Does it have a lot? No. But, you look at things that are made non-fat, low-fat, etc. What you see with products that are manufactured like that, as probably a lot of your listeners know, is that what they do when they reduce the fat is they first there's the connotation that well, it has no fat, so I can have more.
Mm-hmm.
So if it has no fat, you get no point of satiation from it. And your body's reaction is to keep eating, keep eating, keep
Interesting.
Eating.
That's right.
And what they do typically when they reduce fat like that is they add three times the amount of sugar.
Uh-huh.
So that's where the insulin crash comes in. Huh. It's almost like they've engineered it, right? Well, I'm hungry again.
Well, they have.
I'll have, right.
There's no almost. They have what they're
doing. I didn't want to throw stones at anybody, but...
Please do.
This is Heritage Radio Network. You have
total stones need to be thrown. Curled.
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah. I mean, it's a pity the way that they have engineered food. And, you know, when we talked briefly, we talked about, some things like with Bill Maher, for instance, that, I had seen, a couple of things on Friday night. You know, they talk about the whole situation where, you know, especially fast foods, and they talk about, well, we can't pay workers this wage because it'll cut into this low margin business. And it's, just a steaming heap, if you will, because the whole situation is that the whole industry is engineered that way. Those margins aren't as small as they make it out, and all of that synthetic and all that GMO.
Subsidized. I mean, they're basically subsidized by taxpayer dollars because the feed costs are so low because of the subsidization of grains and soybeans.
Sure, sure.
But let's move along a little bit because we only have a few minutes left, and I know one of the things that I saw in your online magazine magazine is that you have a career development aspect of Hip for Kids.
I've had for many years.
You know, training and encouraging young chefs to work in your after-school programs or training kids who come up through the programs themselves. Tell us a little bit about that. What's going on?
Well, that's where we get a lot of our secret weapon is actually, you know, a lot of young people in the culinary schools in New York City especially, who are very keen on community service, and they just love what they see. You know, one of the things is that, you know, we've been very, very lucky with recruiting from some of the schools and also people who are retired chefs. Gene Poncini, who is my program coordinator, you know, he'll basically be doing, you know, four schools in the Bronx with us in the fall, for instance. But that's another secret weapon of ours, you know, just really very, very effective. But it actually spun out of an entire idea where we had worked with OCFS here in New York for many, many years.
I'm sorry, what is OCFS?
Office of Children and Family Services.
Okay.
And I had actually created a program with Rodney Pride, who was their director down here in the five boroughs, and it was to combat recidivism. So instead of, you know, these kids having absolutely nothing but looking forward to, you know, something
committing another petty crime and going back to jail for selling a couple of blunts.
Right. Yeah. Learn a trade. You know, at the very least, if you're not going to inject yourself into the trade, you've learned how to cook on a, you know, a minuscule budget. Everything that we do is fresh food. You know, and, you know, it's interesting because you look, you know, this has to be 13 years ago when we were at a summit in Harlem, and I basically, you know, relayed a thought that was something that was taught to me at Culinary Institute of America by a tremendous chef taught me there. His mantra was always, and why doesn't he or she know about this, meaning the customer or the layman, lack of culinary knowledge.
Yeah.
And if you just take that basic knowledge and relay it to people, you can really start to turn things around on end, especially considering, you know, back in the 70s, 73% of Americans were still connected to agriculture. Now it's 2%, right? So that culinary knowledge, relaying that, you know, you look across the, you know, socioeconomic spectrum, if you will, and you see people who are high income, and you might have high school students that age, and they can't identify 8 out of 10 fresh vegetables.
That is true.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I see that a lot. I mean, I have a teenager myself, and I do see that a lot of the kids are really pretty unaware of the opportunities or shall we say the flavor profiles of way too many ingredients. I mean, it's just too alien. Even though they'll eat sushi, it's so funny because New York City kids, they're exposed to so many different types of food. Like, they're very literate about ethnic choices,
right?
But they are not literate about the basic nuts and bolts of what goes into making something. And it's a really odd disconnect. So they'll eat sushi very happily. They'll go out for rice and beans. But if you ask them to identify something in the grocery store, chances are they don't have a clue.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because, you know, I still do a lot of private cooking. I was cooking for a U.S. ambassador, a friend of mine, late last year, and I was in a store, and the young guy at the checkout counter, the cashier, held up an artichoke, and he said, "What's this?"
Yeah, I see that all the time whenever I shop. Whenever somebody's new to the cash register, you show them a certain type of, you know, like, even if it's something like a tomatillo, which you think they might know, or if it's something like fava beans or artichokes or even certain types of eggplant. But anyway, let's move on a little bit because I wanted to ask you, how is your, because we really literally only have a couple of minutes left, what makes your approach different from other culinary programs that are targeted towards youth? For instance, Family Cook Productions. I've had Lynn Fredericks on a couple times. They have a program that's also very much an after-school-based idea, and they do like Teen Iron Chef, and they have contests. They do some really cool stuff, and I don't think it's all that different. And I sort of wondered about what made your program different from that, and then also, do you team up with organizations like that? Do you guys, you know, ever sort of you know, consolidate your strengths, as it were?
For many years, we, you know, worked with a number of different organizations. We actually started with ADA and Mount Sinai School of Medicine. We were doing what we were doing, I think, about 6 years before Lynn started her programming. Mm-hmm. But the situation is that we are always partnering, of course. Funding last year was minuscule, to say the least.
Yeah.
But the situation is that we're always partnering with things like EchoFest, for instance, organizations like that. We had partnered with Urban Go Green for a number of years. We, again, last year had to sacrifice doing anything with Urban Go Green because of budget, essentially we have been, New York City schools and New York City parks is the perfect examples. We were the original cooking component for Wake Up, Shape Up New York, going back 9.5, 10 years, I think.
Right.
That was Deputy Commissioner Kevin Jeffrey, New York City Parks Department, installed us in all of the high rates of obesity and diabetes communities. Unfortunately, mostly Harlem, Bronx, etc. Mm-hmm. And those are traditionally the partners that we've been working with. We went so far with Parks Department where we actually taught them the model so that they could carry it on system wide, which they do still today.
Amazing. Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap it up here. So I just want to let people know that they can find out more information about HIP for Kids at HIP4 Kids, KIDS. .org, right?
That's right.
And then you can read your newsletter and all of the projects that you're doing and what's going to happen with Project Apple, the very secret program that you're rolling out next fall, good Lord willing, and the funding comes.
Yes.
And I want to say thank you to my sponsor, and I also want to let my listeners know that next week, Hank Cardullo is coming on. Hank is a food industry analyst. He's a really interesting guy, and he's basically a financial whiz. He writes for Forbes, he writes for The Atlantic, and he and I will be talking about activism and economics in the food industry. So I do hope you'll join me for that show. I want to thank you very much, Chris, for coming in. Thanks, Christy, for sitting in. Thanks to Joe, my engineer, and thanks to my sponsor. We'll see you next week. It's been another great episode of What Doesn't Kill You? See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.